7 concertos by Ludwig van Beethoven were published during the composer's lifetime. There are also another 3, maybe 4, early concertos which are wholly or partly lost. On top of this, there are substantial sketches for a 6th piano concerto. One thing is rather striking, though. Only one of all of these is in a minor key. That's the 3rd piano concerto. And the minor key is the one especially associated with Beethoven's titanic tragic vein, C minor. That's the key of the 5th symphony, and also of the famous Pathetique piano sonata. At the opening of the sonata, Beethoven seems to think that the chord of C minor is itself so charged with expressive power that all he has to do is play it to establish the mood. Everything that follows seems to grow right from it. Now let's look at the 3rd piano concerto, which was begun the year after the Pathetique sonata. Similarly, Beethoven seems to think there's so much power in the simple basic ingredients of C minor that that's all he needs at first. The first theme begins by spelling out the 3 notes of the triad of C minor. A lot of themes from the classical era are based on chords like that. But listen to the piano's first solo entry a few minutes later. Here's another basic ingredient of C minor, a rising scale. Beethoven seems to think that that's powerful enough in itself for the piano to sound it 3 times, and thus to announce the soloist's arrival. Imagine a dark, cloaked, black-hatted, tragic figure sweeping on stage. So here's a work that seems very sure of its C minor credentials, tragic credentials. It's full of stormy, turbulent elements. The orchestral introduction, before the first solo entry we've just heard, does something rather unusual for a classical era concerto. It sweeps momentarily through other keys, creating a tremendously dramatic, stormy effect. So we have an intense tonal and thematic drama, and this before the piano has even played a single note. Beethoven really is breaking classical conventions all over the place. Mozart and his contemporaries would have had the orchestra prepare the themes, but leave the dramatic development to the soloist. Here, it seems, the orchestra wants to be part of the drama from the start. So now perhaps it's getting even clearer why the piano is so keen to assert himself on first appearance. It's as though he's saying, "I can be as forceful as you." Then come piano decorations, embellishments to this theme. The piano is establishing this music as his own, especially lyrically. It's as though he's now saying to the orchestra, well, you can storm and rage, I can too, but I can also sing. This more lyrical music is impressive too, because now Beethoven is taxing the pianist's singing powers, and so soon after all that brute forcefulness. It's as though he's saying, can you make this box of wires and hammers sound like a human voice? Apparently, Beethoven, as a pianist, was especially good at coaxing the lyrical, vocal expression from the piano. And he's keen here to demonstrate both sides of the piano in the solo cadenza that comes at the climax of this first movement. First of all, there's an impressive keyboard storm, with the first two notes of the original theme struggling to make themselves heard, like a swimmer in a raging torrent shouting towards the shore before being engulfed by floodwaters. The piano really outstrips the orchestra there for wild modulations to remote keys, and then shows his tender, poetic side in soothing song. The end of the cadenza, we really focus in on the piano as the singer-poet. But then, in a way, he's shown to be tragically fragile. The cadenza culminates in one of those passages which is very difficult to play, but is meant to sound almost effortless. Beethoven asks for trills in both hands, while the remaining fingers have to pick out important motifs in imitation. Then, for one exquisite moment, there are three simultaneous trills. It's a real test of strength and dexterity. But if you're aware of any effort on the pianist's part, then the effect is ruined. Thank you. So, we have tragedy. We have storm and tender melodious pathos, the essence of Beethoven's Titanic C minor. Are we right in regarding this as a tragic concerto? That would certainly seem to hold good up till the end of the first movement. But the beginning of the second movement takes us to another world entirely. So we have the remoteness of a new key and a new mood underlined by the complete change in the sound of the orchestration, velvety, otherworldly. Key relations in Beethoven, they can sound so abstract, but they never are just abstract in this composer. They always mean something. They're always part of the emotional fabric. Here, it's a chance for the piano as singer to show himself again, now perhaps like the mythological figure of Orpheus, to take us away from storm and strife as embodied in the first movement. The high point of this movement, as in the first movement, is a cadenza, but it's a very different kind of cadenza. It's purely lyrical. You can imagine a singer vocalizing on just one syllable, and it's marked sempre con gran espressione, always with great expression. Now we come to the finale. By rights, this should bring us back to the original home key, and so it does. So we're back in C minor. But how tragic did you think that music is? Was there for you perhaps an element of teasing as Beethoven stretches out that slightly panting falling figure? And then this ever so slightly ludicrous operatic cadenza. If you think back again in theatrical terms, well, that stretched leap as the theme returns and that skipping rhythm at the end, it's as though our actor in his black cape and hat doesn't seem to be taking this tragedy entirely seriously. Does what I say sound like heresy? There are plenty of examples in Beethoven, though, where the tragic element is at least partly questionable. We're used to the idea, aren't we, that comedy can turn out to be a mask concealing tragedy, the real suffering human face underneath. But as Hans Keller, the self-styled anti-musicologist, liked to put it, why can't it also be the other way round? Why can't there be cases where tragedy turns out to be a mask concealing comedy? One version of Beethoven's last words is "Il finito la commedia," the comedy is over. You can hear that quite violently in the quartet that Beethoven called the Quartet Serioso, opus 95 in F minor. It's full of violent, impassioned upheavals, searing sadness. Then, towards the end, it seems to be reaching an exhausted, resigned conclusion. And then... Extreme changes of mood are very much part of Beethoven's emotional makeup. Here, perhaps, there's a bit more of a transition than in Opus 95. But then comes a moment when doubt is cast aside. There's a dramatic, expectant orchestral pause, another sweeping piano cadenza, and then the final transformation of the finale theme. And all pretense at high seriousness is gone, apparently for good. There's an interesting tiny detail of scoring here. At that point, the orchestral entry, the warm, sensuous voice of the clarinet is silenced for the rest of the work. After this, we get only the reedy oboes and bassoons and the sparkling flute, the woodwind instruments that readily suggest laughter, as so often in Mozart's operas. So, does this ending negate the tragedy of the first movement and the heavenly consoling song of the second movement? It certainly isn't a triumphant willed overcoming of C minor, as in the Symphony No. 5. But I think it's subtler than that. All these different states of being coexist. Beethoven is so often portrayed as logical and purposeful, the embodiment of the philosopher Nietzsche's formula for happiness, a yes, a no, a straight line, a goal. But Beethoven can also delight in opposites, contradictions, paradoxes, and jokes. All the rich possibilities contained in that term, tragicomic. On one level, this piano concerto seems to look forward to all the Byronic romantic piano concertos that exploded onto the scene in the 19th century. And then, in the finale, it goes beyond it, perhaps even sends it up. It's the coming together of these many different voices, these paradoxes, that makes Beethoven so gloriously uncategorizable.